Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is supported in part by the Bertha Foundation. This podcast is supported in part by the Bertha Foundation.
Joining me now is Lewis Hobber. Hello, Lewis.
Hello, Daniel. How are you?
Good. Now, you're not on the podcast tonight. Where are you going to be?
Dan, ever since the big news for us last week, I've been inundated with offers to join the cultural elite on their red carpets, in their mansions, on their yachts, on their helicopters, in their private jets. And unfortunately, I'm going to be joining all the glitz and the glamour tonight at the opening night of Jagged Little Pill, the Alanis Morissette musical. So you call me just before I walk down the red carpet to see Natalie Bassingthwaite do her thing.
I like that. Some people went to the actors this week or the Australian Directors Guild, but you are going to the red carpet of Jagged Little Pill. Isn't that ironic? And you're a director.
It is. I've placed 10,000 spoons somewhere around the theatre, and then I've left one loaf of bread in the middle. And when they realise all they need is a knife, this whole place is going to go to town on it.
God. Well, I just thought I'd give you a call before we do this because I just wanted to acknowledge that we won. For people who haven't been following us on social media, we won Best Comedy Podcast at the Australian Podcast Awards. And I just wanted to say thank you, Lewis. It's been an absolute privilege this year. I feel like we've gone strength to strength.
Yeah, it was. You and I are both very surprised. And delighted, of course, really honoured, because it was, you know, there's a lot of incredible people up in that category. And, you know, we didn't expect to get it 2 years in a row, but it was, I think going in, we were like, well, we won't want it. And then afterwards, we had a real moment of gratitude, going like, you know what, we're really proud of ourselves. We're really grateful to all the people who listen. So Thank you to everyone who listened.
And, yeah, especially thank you to our Patreon supporters who keep us afloat and keep the costs of this podcast in check. If you want to become a Patreon supporter, please go to patreon.com/irrationalfear. And that money goes to doing frivolous things, Lewis, in order to console the Chaser, who were nominated for Best Comedy, yet didn't even make it into the top three. I spent $90 and sent them by delivery a ham.
Very kind.
I just didn't want them to leave the awards empty-handed. So,
Jesus Christ. And it's that kind of quality comedy that gets you to the top of the podcast awards.
And, Lewis, if you want to see top quality puns like that, you can come and see us live on stage at our live show in January. We've got a few in January, in February, but the big one is our 10-year anniversary show at the Opera House, Lewis.
It's so exciting, Dan. Obviously, I won't be attending. I'll just be at the front at the red carpet, glad handing all the high rollers in attendance. Is that Kate Blanchett? Oh, you didn't need to come and see our podcast, Kate.
So Lewis will be late to that show. Lewis is going to be doing it. Also, Amy Ramikas from The Guardian, Gabby Bolt from The Chaser, Dylan Bain from Newsfighters, and also the treasurer of New South Wales, Matt Keane, is going to be joining us on stage. I haven't quite figured out what we're going to do with Matt Keane. I figure the best thing to do would be to try and bribe him with some Patreon money.
Sure. Yeah. Let's see if he's open to it.
And we are booking one more extra special guest. So get your tickets at the Opera House website and do come along. I'm recording my end of Irrational Fear on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded. We need a treaty. Let's start the show.
Irrational Fear contains naughty words like Brexit, Canberra, Fair Dicum, and Section 40. Irrational Fear recommends listening by immature audiences.
Tonight, the Prime Minister of Finland, Sanna Marin, has been criticised for visiting a nightclub despite being exposed to COVID-19. Could this finish her career? And to improve his chances of re-election, Scott Morrison has today announced that he'll be running as an independent candidate for the electorate of Cook. And the religious discrimination bill has been shelved, which I think that means the coalition have shoved out their ass so it can be absorbed more quickly. It is the 10th of December, which means it's only 48 sleeps until Scott Morrison may call an election. This is Irrational Fear.
Irrational Fear!
Hello, welcome to Irrational Fear. I'm your host, Dan Illich, former Bathurst 100 champagne bottle. And this is Irrational Fear, the show that takes the scariest stories of the week and drinks them down with a shot of lime. Let's meet our fearmongers for tonight. He's got the sharpest eye in the Canberra gallery, and when he's in full flight, he's part human, part SD card reader. It's the bloke from Talking Pictures, Mike Bowers. Welcome, Mike.
Hi, Dan.
I've seen you in full flight. You are like RoboCop. Have you ever considered, getting some of those SD card readers permanently implanted into your body?
I'm fully Bluetooth now. I just have to really put it on my tongue and I can, transfer them.
And she writes jokes, doodles jokes, and sometimes she says jokes too. It's the political cartoonist Fiona Katauskas.
Great to be here, Dan. It's an honour. Now I won't have anything to listen to tomorrow because this is my standard fare and I won't want to listen to myself. But I will enjoy it being here and, yes, it's great to be here.
And he's one of Melbourne's most prestigious private schoolboys. He went to school with some of this country's future leaders, which is why he threw it all away to do comedy. It's Yanni Agisolo.
Oh, thank you very much for outing me so early on, Dan.
Well, I've decided to out you out now so we can talk about it a little bit later on because it's going to come up.
It always does. I've been running from my past for too long.
Coming up later, we speak with Zoe Daniel, the former foreign correspondent who is running as an independent in next year's election. We'll ask her how she'll defund the ABC. But first, here is a message from this week's sponsor.
Good morning, everyone, and fellow Australians. Many people are asking me, when am I going to run for politics? Well, there's no better time to step up than after being stood down. So, after being the king of broadcasting on 2UE and 2GB, I'm joining the LNP. After all, they share my values. We both deny the existence of climate change. We both deny the existence of women. We both know how to do cash for comment. Speaking of, there's never been a better time for a gas-led recovery. 9 out of 10 epidemiologists agree the best way to cure a respiratory virus like COVID-19 is with a gas pipeline, pumping delicious natural methane to everyone's home where they sleep. Turn on your gas pipe today. And when it comes to accountability, I'm not scared of a federal ICAC. After all, I've had to face ACMA a number of times. Remember when I started a race riot? I was held accountable and forced to say sorry. Oh, God, that was hard. It was only a race, right? So vote one me, Alan Jones. Oh, I'm Alan Jones.
I think it's good just to do a quick plug for the sponsor here. According to rumours online, perhaps, this time tomorrow, Alan Jones could be making some kind of announcement about his future. I wonder what that announcement could be. Yanni?
It's about time. It's about time. I mean, if there's one thing that Australia needs, it's more of Alan Jones's opinions in a public forum with at least now an outward agenda.
And the added bonus, that he can go into Parliament and be fully protected with any rant that he wishes to have.
That's exactly right. He's he can lean in when they're in the middle of a diatribe and go, gentlemen, I'm a professional. I've done this for 30 years.
Yep. Lean into parliamentary privilege.
What about portfolio? I mean, do you people think Alan Jones would prefer to be inside the cabinet or out of the cabinet?
I think it's a newly created position called Minister for Information.
typically I think Alan's an outside the tent pissing in type of guy, but 80's the new 70. So if he gets elected, this could be a brand new start. I can see him in the cabinet. I can see him in the cabinet.
Fiona, what role do you think Alan would have in cabinet?
Okay, well, I reckon they'd create a whole new portfolio for him, and rather than the Minister for Defence, he'd be the Minister for Offence, and he'd just list all the things that he's offended about all the time. There'd be woke, we'd hear about woke things all the time. It would be fantastic, wouldn't it? Like, he could just do his, like, 10 minutes of hate a day and just stand there and squawk about how terrible and everything is. And look, it would probably win votes.
And if anyone complained, he could just say, what, you've all been harping on about more government transparency. Now, this is exactly what we think.
Alan, you've got it made. Listen to Irrational Fear.
That's why I put that joke in about ACMA, because it's like ACMA is like the most toothless government body in the world. And, you know, you can actually create a race, right? And all you have to do is apologise. Like, he wouldn't be scared of a federal ICAC, or rather the model of federal ICAC that ScoMo is proposing.
The heavy hand.
Yes, the wet lettuce approach again.
It's funny when Australia chooses to be light-handed, you know, in its enforcement of things. Like, it's very bipolar, isn't it? Like, you're speeding and then all of a sudden you got your $400 fine. There's no question about that, right? But when it comes to a federal ICAC, they're like, oh, maybe you shouldn't do it. I mean, I think we could do it more in an advisory capacity.
This week's First Fear, Scott Morrison has confirmed that Australian officials and diplomats would not attend the Beijing Winter Olympics, which is a big relief to Anastasia Palaszczuk. The boycott led by the USA is a small gesture of pressure upon China in relation to their human rights violations in the Xinjiang province. Chinese officials in Beijing have in turn accused Scott Morrison of political posturing, to which the rest of Australia said, that's kind of what he does all the time. Does it matter that Australian officials aren't attending the Winter Olympics, Yanni?
I found the phrasing interesting because, you know, you're like, oh, this is what Scott Morrison does. But, you know, you can't call boycotting posturing. Like, that's literally what it is. Like, it's actually just going, yeah, that's what not going to your party because of all the bad things you're doing is. It's a posture. Like, so it's, I'm just saying, like, from a nomenclature point of view.
As someone who's held parties in the past and has complained that people aren't turning up and it's labelled it as posturing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, it's all the kidnapping and genocide. That's why we're not coming for drinks on Friday, Yanni. No, so I read this one and I how sometimes you don't hear the full story initially, and I thought, oh, this is big. They're going to boycott the Olympics. This is like 1980 all over again. And then they were like, oh, it's just extending to the diplomats. And I was like, wow, that's actually quite a compliment. You know, it's like, you know, the collective succubi of the Olympic diplomatic corps that you guys have to kiss ass to and like, you know, and be like, yeah, we're not sending them. And if I were China, I'd be like, thank you very much. It might help us to get these games done under budget.
I loved the reaction that the Chinese had, which was like, well, you weren't invited anyway. So.
Yes. There's been a few different ones. There's the kind of like, yeah, you weren't invited anyway. And then there was I don't know, do you ever read news articles and you just see the choice of words that people have used and go, oh, that's new. So I was reading one of the articles about this. And, you know, because the Chinese obviously is flexing their muscle more now. And the Chinese said several countries might be wary of not overplaying their hand.
Yes.
What do you mean? Like, is that like really calling out Jamaica and their bobsled team? Is that what they're saying there?
No, I think it's a political equivalence, the diplomatic equivalence to Clint Eastwood or you're feeling lucky punk.
Yeah.
If you're an Australian athlete, though, you'd probably be happy that Australian officials aren't going. I mean, if you won gold in Beijing at the Winter Olympics, you'd then have to go to the embassy and get a photo with Peter Dutton, probably. And so it's lucky. It's a really fortunate thing you don't actually have to do that now.
Dan, you're missing the point here, which is something that I find kind of hilarious, is it'd have more impact if we boycotted something that we actually are good at or actually attended. Yeah. Like, this is like, we're not turning up to something that we're not competing in, or if we do, we'll come last, except for, you know, the Stephen Bradbury thing.
We've already got one Bradbury. We don't need another one.
If China wanted to hold a sporting event we should boycott, they should hold the Ashes so we can boycott that.
Yeah, I know. Then it would be a big deal if we boycotted it.
Have we got your attention now?
Winter Olympics, they're not a big deal in Australia really, except for if they're good, you know, dramatic ones like Sochi. Remember Sochi when there was like construction issues and corruption and it was the most expensive thingy ever, and then the toilets didn't connect? Remember there were all those stories and it was really like, fuck, is it going to happen? And then Putin's mates are just reeling in the cash. And then after that, a whole lot of Russians, we got you know, had drug issues, had, you know, whatever they were, what's it called? Performance enhancing drugs, and they got banned. That's what you want out of a fucking Winter Olympics. You don't just want some diplomats not turning up.
The best jeopardy in Sochi in 2012, I believe, was the lack of snow. Like, they actually had a Winter Olympics without any snow. So that was... That was a real trick. That was a real trick there.
Climate change. Da, 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 da.
I think it's a comment on the quality of our leadership at the moment that we don't have a PM. Like, if we had a better PM, then when, you know, when they said, do you think it'll affect the Australian curling team that the diplomats aren't there? He could have just leant in and gone, look, I don't hold a mop, mate.
Oh, nice.
Can any of you guys name the Minister for Sport?
The Minister for Sport. Minister, is it
Fletcher? Is it like arts and sport, or is sport? No, sport would have its own portfolio in this.
See, who gives a shit if the diplomats go or not?
Who is it, Mike? Who is
it? It's Richard Colbeck.
Aged care and sport.
Yeah, they go together.
Oh, they put them together. Is he still aged care?
And youth, I think, as well.
That's a bit of a... So you don't really think of aged care and sport as a combined portfolio. They don't sort of naturally go together.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. I think that's Roman Empire stuff right there, you know. I'd refer to the minister for...
Oh, yeah, right. I got gold in the 300 Zimmer frame.
Irrational fear.
You know, this is, you know, I've been saying all week, we're not looking in the rearview mirror. We're looking through the front windscreen.
Irrational fear.
This week's second fear. On Saturday, the youngest national leader in the world, the Finnish Prime Minister, her name is Sanna Marin, went out clubbing until 4 a.m. At the same time, her foreign minister had tested positive to COVID. But Prime Minister Marin didn't know this because she had her phone at home, and the Helsinki press have completely ripped into her for not isolating. She did a test on Sunday, which was negative. Mike, why do you think this story is interesting? Should we encourage more of our leaders to be clubbing at 4 a.m.?
Absolutely. She was seen dancing and partying at a place called the Butchers Club, Dan, in the nation's capital into the wee hours, 4 a.m. And the trouble came when she got home, of course, and read all these text messages saying, you must isolate immediately. So she went and had a test, and, of course, it came up negative. But Gossip Magazine published pictures of Miss Marin partying with her friends, and they amplified the criticism. And it got me thinking, we really don't have any politicians in our stable in Australia, state or federal, who are capable of partying till 4 a.m. And wouldn't it be nice if they could?
Tim Smith, is your criticism of Tim Smith that he wouldn't make it to 4?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I got to thinking who might be capable. I think probably George Christensen, the member for Dawson, would probably be capable. Who knows? He probably does it in another country till 4 a.m. The appropriately named and previously mentioned Senator Alex Antic may create less trouble for his own government if he perhaps confined his antics to the dance floor. Our own version here happened the other night when the National Party went to let its hair down at the Kingo, the pub in Canberra. And Sam McMahon was allegedly taking air swings at the National's federal director, Jonathan Hawkes, as she left the party.
Ooh. Didn't this just come after Barnaby Joyce saying we need to show more respect in the National Party?
Exactly. We need to respect each other more. Here comes Senator McMahon air swinging at the national director.
Apparently someone requested the Macarena and they cut off someone else's favourite song and it all went downhill from there.
I wondered whether we could elevate this clubbing to a sort of a diplomacy level, and perhaps our Prime Minister Scott Morrison, Peter Dutton and Michael Pizzullo.
Oh, that sounds like a grim night out.
Could exchange the drums of war for some doof doof on the dance floor. With Chinese leaders to solve our current tensions, perhaps. It's worth a try, I think.
Get on the Xi Jinpingers.
In the 70s, we had ping pong diplomacy. Well, this could be pinger diplomacy.
I love this comment from YouTube. Man with Dominant Claw says, Adam Bant would be up till 4, but only because he'd be driving people home.
Irrational fear.
Who sets a Christmas tree on fire?
It's a tree that unites us, that brings us together. It's about the Christmas spirit. It's about Jesus.
Today there are no lights because somebody burned down our Christmas tree.
I hope we put it back.
Irrational fear.
This week's third fear. They're a bit behind the times in Andrew Laming's office. One of his staffers went to a Halloween party in November dressed as Kyle Rittenhouse, the teenager that shot dead two BLM protesters. Now, this guy, his name is Barclay McGain, was sacked a couple of years ago from his initial job in the electorate office after posting a video from schoolies that was denigrating Indigenous Australians. And then 6 months later, he was hired by Lamming, who said that he was an important asset to the office due to staffers' youth connections. Now, the only youth connections I can kind of make out from this picture is the Hitler youth. Are they the kind of youth connections that Barclay McGain has? What kind of youth connections does Andrew Lamming need in his office, Fiona?
So this guy, yes, was a staffer for the egregious member for Bowen, the execrable Andrew Lamming, who, hang on a second, just getting a text from my lawyer here. He is definitely not an upskirter. Not an upskirter.
Wow.
Definitely not an upskirter. Never upskirted ever.
Fiona, you can say he's an upskirter if you say, in my honest opinion, he's an upskirter.
I am not going to say that because, in my honest opinion, he is also a vexatious litigant.
Right.
So,
all I'm going to say is, as a trained lawyer, I wouldn't take that advice.
Okay, all right. It's great we've got legal representation on the floor. Please stop me if I...
That is also not legal advice.
Okay, all right, excellent. But anyway, back to Young, the improbably named Barclay McGain. What pisses me off about this is that these pampered, you know, $2 shop fascists get all their memes and tropes from America. They're not even fucking good enough to come up with their own shit. Anyway, you know, and they're supposed to be nationalists. Surely you would think that a nationalist would, you know, have Aussie things. So
yeah, we've got perfectly fine murderers here that you could dress up as. Like, you could dress up as Ivan Milat if you're really keen.
You could go as Martin Bryant. People don't forget.
Look, we've also got a perfectly good Kyle Sanderland.
Exactly, Fiona. It's an Australian. Why is George Christensen not supporting local talent?
Yes.
He's talking to US conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. We have a perfectly good Australian conspiracy theorist here at home called Jones.
Alan Jones, same number. The first name has the same number of letters. I'm sure QAnon would have something to say about that.
It is un-Australian.
And look, you know, I don't know. We do have our right-wing people. I don't know if you've ever listened to Macca of a Sunday morning on Radio National, but he could be our Bush Tucker Carlson. He's, you know, the man of the right. He loves to complain about how things aren't the same as they used to be, but never quite saying why, but maybe we know why.
Are you allowed to say that you've been cancelled when you get your job back?
You are. Talk about it all the time. You can go on every platform. You can get a million jobs and use them all to complain about how you've been cancelled. That is the nature of the deal. But if you're, you know, Yasmin Abdul McGee, then you just cancelled straight out of the country and you're never allowed to complain.
Yeah, it's called the grievance industrial complex. It's a cycle.
It is the grievance industrial complex. Speaking of which, another person you could cosplay as from the right, if you wanted to, Australian right, good Aussie right, Daisy Cousins, because she'd be really easy to cosplay because she is fully cosplaying herself all the time as a lead role in a community theatre production set in a Wild West saloon. So they're there. We've got the people. And also they're a bit shit, so maybe they would tamper our expectations and we wouldn't get the crazy right wing and it would diffuse the whole thing and everyone would just go home in embarrassment. There we go. I don't know.
That's my solution. That makes complete sense. Thank you so much for that. Our interview guest tonight is no stranger to stories that are genuinely dangerous. In fact, last time I saw her in the flesh was about May 2015. She was bolting out of a foyer from a Manila hotel to her transport, and I got the feeling she definitely didn't want to be seen by any Australians, particularly Australians who have lots of followers on Twitter. She is a former foreign correspondent, now turned local independent candidate. It's Zoe Daniel. Welcome, Zoe, to Irrational Fear.
Hello, everyone, and I'm totally out of my depth here, just to be clear, as a starting point.
You're running for Parliament. We're just sitting on our asses.
That's the headline in The Australian tomorrow. Zoe Daniel says she's out of her depth.
In this podcast, not in the political sphere.
It's funny what people are scared of. I've had firemen come up after gigs and say, I couldn't do what you do.
Zoe, welcome to Irrational Fear. It is a real privilege to have you. This is a bit of a strange one because you are running as an independent in the next election. And I guess the question you have to be answering quite often lately is why?
Because it's time, to borrow a phrase. Something has to give, I think. And what's become evident since we launched, which is now almost 2 weeks ago, and that's a bit of a blur, is that there's huge support behind this independent movement. And I've just experienced the most uplifting couple of weeks, I guess, having had a pretty negative view of democracy and where we're at politically. I actually feel really positive about it after a couple of weeks as a candidate, because we've had this overwhelming support. Everything from my inbox is overflowing on every platform email that you could consider, my phone melting down, people stopping at my front gate, people stopping me in the street, people stopping me in the shopping centre, just to say we're so relieved that you're stepping up and thank you, and being really grateful and excited. So this is a really positive sort of tipping point moment, I think.
Was the main person stopping you Tim Wilson? Was Tim Wilson trying to stop you in the street to say, please stop running?
I haven't run into Tim so far, and I may have been practicing avoidance on that. So, you know, just running my own race.
What's the one message you're hearing, Zoe?
Yeah, the overarching message is accountability is lost and we got to get it back. And that applies to all of the policy positions. Our main pillars are good, forward-thinking, economically focused climate policy, an integrity commission, but also broader integrity in politics, transparent economic management, and genuine equality and safety for women. And that accountability piece sits over all of those things. People feel that they've lost control of the process, that the party political system has just become argy-bargy at each other and all about getting re-elected, and that every policy position is about how it plays rather than what's actually meaningful to people and communities. And because this is a bottom-up movement driven by people in local communities, what those people really want is that accountability back.
Have you been in touch with the other crossbench independents like Zali Stegall and Helen Haynes?
Sure, I've spoken to Zali. I know her a little bit because, you know, journo. So I've interviewed Zali a couple of times. She's been in touch just to offer informal support. I haven't spoken to Helen Haynes. Her predecessor, Cathy McGowan, is a very old friend of mine. We've known each other since the mid-90s. We actually did a trip to the US together with a group of rural women in 1998. That was actually my first ever trip overseas and possibly launched me into foreign correspondenthood.
Wow.
So I've talked to Cathy a lot, and Cathy was, you know, a big advocate and sort of chief convincer in terms of getting me on board to do it. So, I mean, if what you're getting at, Mike, there's no formal relationship between the independents, and I know that that's being pushed. And, of course, we have some common positions and synergies, and perhaps there is some informal discussion going on, but there's no formal collaboration in any way.
I've got a question that kind of goes from that, or no? Can I just ask, Zoe, because I can totally understand why people see the appeal of independence more and more. It's everything you've said about losing trust in the system. When one more person steps away from the party system, I mean, when I see the problem sometimes is the lack of consensus. Can you tell me how you think having lots of independence helps that, or is that something that is a difficulty?
Well, you know, I think some people put forward the position that if you have more independence, or if Parliament's being potentially controlled by the crossbench, that creates a stall. And, yeah. But I actually think the reverse. I think we are stalled. So I think that independence can actually create progress. And yeah. I think particularly if you get a group of people who are keen for collaboration, conversation. And so someone like me, I mean, I've spent, you know, 30 years, but especially the last 15 years as a correspondent, often talking to people with reverse views to me. So I've really learned to learn from them, to perhaps adapt some of their views into my position, and if not that, to consider their position, how they're affected by things that I'm not. And so all of those things, therefore, potentially play into how I would behave as a crossbencher. And I'm actually sincerely a swinging voter, someone who votes basically on policy and who the leadership team is. I'm not ideological at all. So I'm actually really keen to have those conversations with whichever party is in power and the other crossbenchers to try to create some progress on some of these intractable issues.
That brings me to my next question. When will you defund the ABC?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, look, it's a bit of a chestnut, isn't it? ABC journalist runs for parliament, and therefore the assumption is that the person is a, you know, rabid lefty. And, you know, as I've just said, I'm much more nuanced than that. But I think actually that I'm on pretty solid ground saying that funding to the ABC and SBS should be restored. The majority of the Australian population sees the ABC as the most trusted media organisation in the country, and indeed the Goldstein electorate agrees with that. But beyond that, as a reporter who's worked across several continents, seeing that, you know, disastrous disintegration of democracy, especially in the United States, where there is not well-funded public media, I think there's a very strong argument for our democratic process for the ABC and SBS to be very solidly supported by taxpayer funds.
We talk a lot about climate change on this podcast, quite a lot. You know, where it's kind of the reason why the podcast exists. These independents that are kind of coming up now, they're trying to take space away from, you know, good, hardworking Liberal coalition people who absolutely believe in climate change. They believe in climate change so much, they've put it on their marketing. I don't know if you've seen, this is Dave Sharma's marketing. He's got a pamphlet that says Net Zero Climate Action. And in your electorate, Zoe, your local member, Tim Wilson, has a pamphlet that says Delivering Carbon Net Neutral Future, the Australian Way. That's some pretty clever stuff, you know.
Indeed. Yeah, I wasn't sure if natural was an actual play on net zero or whether it was an actual spelling error, but either way, I think it fell flat. I mean, look, I want to be clear that I think there's some pretty negative politics that people are really sick of, and I'm really going to go with the we go high kind of rationale during this campaign. But what I would say about the so-called Liberal moderates is watch what they do, not what they say. You know, they campaign on particular positions and then they vote with the National Party every single time. And that's why we're stuck. And if people are worried about having a hung parliament, we actually have a hung parliament now, and that parliament is controlled by the National Party. And that's why we're not getting progress on climate policy.
That last 2 weeks of parliament, I've been around a very long time and I've seen a lot of these. I've never seen a more disrupted and out of control in both houses, with people crossing the floor. Bridget Archer in the lower house, hardly what you'd call a lefty socialist, from the seat of Bass. In the upper house, you had four or five of them crossing the floor. It was the Star Wars cantina. So in many ways, you're right. It was a hung parliament and it was out of control.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, in some ways, it was a pretty toxic last couple of weeks of parliament, don't get me wrong, but some of that I think is good. You know, that disruption that we saw, that finally people being prepared to cross the floor, I think is a bit of a sign of the times, that people are demanding more courage of their conviction from their politicians. And that's why people are starting to gravitate towards independence, because we won't have to vote with our party on party lines. Every vote will be not only a conscience vote, but a brain vote. Like, we will actually look at the legislation on its merits, consider the impact, consider that against the backdrop of what we've campaigned on for our various electorates, and then say, okay, this is how I'm going to vote on that.
I really enjoyed your comment about this is a vote for brains. Is this why in every bit of marketing you're wearing your glasses?
Well, unfortunately, age does happen. And I used to be able to get away with not wearing my glasses so much, but now...
This is a really big decision to go into. You know, Alex Turnbull put up a really interesting post the other day about politics and being in a family, the political family, and the kind of stresses that has with inside the family. What did you talk to your family about when you were making this decision? Like, how did you come to this decision to run and, you know, put, you know, everyone you love in the same boat with you?
Yeah, so when I was initially approached, my response was, nah. No, I can't do that. I can't do that to my family.
Who approached you? Are you allowed to tell?
Yeah, my friend Ange Pippos, who's a journo, ABC journo from way back, and she and I have known each other for 30 years. We went to university together. She was asked if she knew anyone. She said, oh, I know the perfect person, which is, thanks very much, Ange. Now we're sort of in this together because Ange is supporting me as well through the campaign. You know, if I had any reservation about it, it was how it would affect my family. And also, this is coming from the perspective of someone who's been a foreign correspondent for 15 years. So getting calls at 3 a.m. and jumping on planes and going to mass shootings and natural disasters and conflict zones and all sorts of pressure and not spending a lot of time with my kids. My kids are now 13 and almost 15. I'm in Melbourne. I'm enjoying life. And then suddenly, oh, why don't you run for federal parliament and take on all of this pressure and, you know, have everything coming from all sides for the next several years? My kids have been so supportive of this because I think I have something that I can contribute that's valuable. So I was sort of going around and round on it for a couple of months, and then my son said, look, Mum, you can do something for us. Someone's got to do something. You can do something for us. Aww. And then we were in the car. I was taking him to footy training and I said, look, I'm going to do it. I've decided I'm going to do it. He was cheering in the car.
Oh, wow.
That's great. Excellent.
What a great feeling.
Yeah, I said, look, bud, I've still got to go through an interview process and stuff. You know, they might not choose me. He said, the first step is to say yes. Everything else will flow from that. I mean, the wisdom.
So how old is your son again?
He's 14.
Does your son do corporate coaching? I really need a new coach. That can be really good.
Zoe, if the Good Burgers of Goldstein elect you as their next representative, how are you going to go on the other side of the camera? We can be a fairly unforgiving bunch of people in the
gallery. Are you threatening her, Mike Bowers?
Oh. No.
You heard it here first, folks.
It's okay. I think I'm doing okay so far, many couple of weeks in. I'm not afraid of it. You know, I don't fear the media. It's to do with communicating with our communities. And that much as it has become a combative relationship, it doesn't always have to be. And I feel like if I'm on solid ground with my facts and my honesty, then that's fine. I can stand on that.
Okay. And so, Zoe, you're not afraid of the media, but are you afraid of, like, backgrounding nastiness sort of backgrounding from the Liberal Party, who seem to be very good at this kind of thing and especially sort of targeting it at women? Is that something that, like, and even if stuff isn't, true but is suggested or, you know, just that whole thing, how are you coping with that?
Look, it's not nice to have nasty things said about you, especially if those things are skewed. And I actually think my husband was perhaps more concerned about that than I was, because I'm kind of used to being trolled as an ABC journalist. So I'm not that worried about it. But I, you know, again, I think my approach will be that just has to wash over. So I have talked to the kids as well about, sometimes something people will say stuff about Mum that's not true or a bit off, and you just have to let it go through to the keeper.
Well, Zoe, we are so lucky to have someone who knows the person you're up against very well. Yanni went to school with Tim Wilson. He can pick. He's got the Achilles heel for you. He's got something. He's got, you know, a bunch of techniques to bring him down.
No, I went to school with Tim Smith.
Oh, the other guy. Oh, no, the other Tim. Oh. The other bad Tim in Melbourne. Yeah. Oh, no.
Well, I'm sure the broad principles are similar.
all Tims are the same.
No, they're not. I've got a Tim. He's good.
He's not. He's a Collingwood supporter.
Oh, shut up. Sorry, Mike knows my team. He's good. He's good.
Yanni, do you have any hot tips to bring down pretentious schoolboys?
No, I only have tips on how to create them. I think I may have insulted a future Victorian MP when we were playing cricket once and he started crying when he was the wicketkeeper, and now I don't know if I did that or not.
Oh, right. So now he's out to get you.
Oh, no. I'm just saying maybe like I wounded him so deeply that now he needs to seek public approval or something. I don't know.
Well, that is it for Irrational Fear. A big thank you to all of our guests today. Mike Bowers, Yanni Gislow, Fiona Katauskas, Zoe Daniel, thank you so much for joining us. Do you guys have anything to plug, Mike?
No, not really. I just wanted to add a final observation this week that I was amazed to see our Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, go and worship at the Cathedral of Australian Motorsport, Mount Panorama, on the weekend. Doubly ironic, given he was part of a government that oversaw the complete destruction of the Australian car industry. And that great bastion of Australian motorsport has always been proudly Australian, Ford versus Holden, and in a few years' time it will be Mustangs not made here and Camaros not made here. So I guess the fact that he was running around using a line from the Talladega Nights movie Shake and Bake was rather appropriate, really.
Fiona, do you want to plug anything?
No pluggables, just vote. I was going to say early and often, but just vote once because that's what we allow in this country.
Just the once.
And who knows when we're going to do it, but just the once.
Yanni, do you want to plug anything?
I'm launching a writing channel on Substack called Joined Up Thinking. That's kind of the whole deal. Although I have been, quote unquote, launching it for about 6 months. So keep an eye out, or just, you know, message me and go, just don't keep it all inside, Yanni. We want to know what's in there.
I want to subscribe to Joined Up Thinking. That's great. Zoe, what would you like to plug?
Just spread the word. If you're interested in what we're doing, and jump on the website zoedaniel.com.au and have a look around at our policies and talk to your friends. And it's all guerrilla marketing, and it's going to be about conversation.
Just the once.
Great.
Just the once.
Big thanks to Road Mics, the Bertha Foundation, our Patreon supporters, and the Australian Podcast Awards. We won the Best Comedy Podcast in Australia last week, which is amazing.
Yay! So good.
I know. Yay! After we just, you know.
I'm drowning in the reflected glory.
Round of applause.
That's it. Big thank you to The Real Pembo, David Bluestein, Maddie Palmer, Killian David on the Discord, Jacob Round on the Teppanyaki Timeline. This month, we lost 6 Patreons this month, despite winning the award, but gained 1, so I don't know why this is, but big thank you to Alasdair Buddha Musigen for joining us on the Patreon. If you listen to us on the Patreon, listen to us each week, hit us up on the Patreon, because your money helps to buying frivolous things like the ham we sent the Chaser when they came forth in the in the podcast awards. Also, we've got a live show at the Sydney Opera House with Amy Romikas, Matt Keane. We've also got Lewis Hobber, Dylan Bain from News Fighters, Gabby Bott from The Chaser, and another special comedy guest. So please head over to our show notes to get tickets.
When is that?
January 29th at the Sydney Opera House.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a really, really huge show. It's our 10-year anniversary. We've been doing this podcast for 10 years. I know. And so thank you so much. And Zoe, thank you so much for joining us on Irrational Fear. Really appreciate you giving up your another night, one of many nights you're going to have to give up to talk to podcasters like us.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
All right.
See you, Zoe.
See you next time. Bye.
See you, Zoe.